Welcome back to Upstate's Health Inc. on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. The movement for humane care for those individuals at the end of their lives has grown in the last 30 years. There are many decisions to be made, and family members and medical staff caring for the patient need to work as a team. Joining us this morning to share some of her insights and wisdom about this very important stage of life is Patricia Knox, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Palliative Care Service and Clinical Faculty for the Center of Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate Medical University. She is also a nationally certified palliative care nurse practitioner. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming in, Pat.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start by getting some kind of clarity on some terminology. First, tell us, what exactly is palliative care?
Well, palliative care, defined in many different ways, but it's interdisciplinary care, and as you said, includes the team. So it's care for people with life-limiting illnesses. This could incorporate chronic illness. This could also be end-of-life care. It's care that is managing people's physical, spiritual, and psychosocial issues in these very difficult times. It includes the patient and family as part of the team, social workers, case managers, chaplains, the physicians. So it's a really big, important team.
It is. And I guess the question I have is, so there is a distinction between palliative care and end-of-life care? In other words, clarify that for us.
Right. A lot of people believe palliative care is just end-of-life care. And the philosophy today in palliative care is that someone can receive this type of holistic care even when they're diagnosed with an illness. They could be being treated for their cancer or their chronic cardiac disease and receive care that's palliative, that would manage their symptoms, improve their quality of life. It also encompasses end-of-life care. So palliative care cares for people from beginning of diagnosis to end of life, but it isn't just end-of-life care.
So let's now get to the point of what then constitutes what we call end-of-life care. Is there a time frame that we look at to make that distinction?
Well, today, end-of-life care oftentimes is set up around the hospice benefit, and when people feel that someone has a terminal diagnosis, and for most purposes, people use 6 months or less as a prognosis for that, that people are determined to be end-of-life care. The new New York State palliative care laws use that definition of terminal diagnosis of 6 months or less too, and so does hospice as a Medicare benefit. So oftentimes when a prognosis for a person is that they approximately have 6 months or less, then end-of-life care is what people focus on.
So just again, for my own purposes, to understand, if you might be offering palliative care to someone who's got a so-called terminal illness, but they may be able to live 2-3 years. Is that correct?
It's possible. It's possible. Hospice sees patients oftentimes with someone certifying that they have 6 months or less to live, but when one provides good symptom management, good quality care, then oftentimes people live longer. The issue is that it's very hard for medicine to prognosticate when someone has 6 months or less. We use standards to determine that, but one can never absolutely guarantee that.
But the key point here is it's usually with a terminal illness, a chronic illness that will lead to death at some
absolutely,
you know, imminent or relatively imminent point in time.
Oftentimes we see in the hospital people with cancer treatments come to a point where the treatments are no longer working for them, and the physicians will sit down and have a discussion and say, these treatments aren't working. We really expect that the way the disease has progressed, that you likely have 6 months or even less, sometimes 3 to 6 months. Oftentimes with cardiac disease, people will go along for years with treatments, and the treatments become less effective, or a patient determines that they become too burdensome for them. Also, renal patients, people getting dialysis. People live for years with those treatments, but at some point they determine maybe that that becomes a burden, and then they choose to say, I don't want to continue these treatments.
And that's when something like palliative care kind of kicks in.
Yep.
So how do you know, then, going along with that, what are the criteria, apart from the person, the patient, saying, I don't choose to have additional medical intervention. How do you know someone requires the end-of-life care? When do you make that distinction, besides, again, the 6 month?
Well, the determination usually is when people's organs are starting to fail. And again, we're a very complex organ, our bodies. But when people's kidneys and their cardiac status and sometimes their nutritional status starts to decline, and people themselves say, I don't want to continue this burden. I'm fatigued. It's causing me more trouble than not to continue with these treatments.
So there are a lot of issues, I would think, for family members and loved ones, as well as the patient, to be involved in, to arrive at that decision. Are there other factors that play a role? For example, I know that I've read somewhere that there's always this issue of the rationing of care in hospitals, for example, or even in hospice-type settings where there's limited access. Do those things play a role in people's decision-making?
Well, I'd like to think that in healthcare professionals, we don't use that as any of our decision-making. I do know that consumers have different experiences and different backgrounds in terms of how they see the medical system. What happens is people will get a misconception sometimes that is about rationing, or it is about the types of care that can be provided when a discussion is had with a patient or family to say, we are at a point where to continue maybe in an ICU, to continue on a ventilator, or to continue some of these treatments may be something that is burdensome for the person. And the actuality is this is not going to cure their disease. This is not going to improve their care. So is it time to weigh the risks and the benefits of these treatments? It isn't about rationing. It is about what is best for that person and their family to make those decisions. Obviously, there's a lot of anxiety related to death. Obviously, there's a lot of dynamic that goes on amongst families. And having participated for so many years in family meetings, when you're trying to have these discussions, I think it's an anxiety about death, it's about the unknown, and it's about maybe that we haven't really had some of these discussions as we should have with our families.
Well, that leads me to the next important point, which is this notion of patient autonomy or advanced directives, which are a series of documents or discussions that allows the patient to really make those choices even before they may be unable to later on down the road. So tell us about advanced directives. What constitutes those, and when should they be done?
You bring up an excellent point. It is known to be about the documents, but it's a process. And what we recommend in this society right now is to start having those discussions at any point. So some of our physicians, when they see their patients on a yearly basis for a regular physical, have a discussion with a patient and say, you know, what is it that you think about for the future? Or who is it that you would want to make decisions for you if you are unable to make those decisions? So first is to appoint a healthcare proxy. Once you're over 18 years of age, everyone should have one. We all think we're never going to die, but I can tell you 100% of us will. When we can't speak for ourselves, who do we want to do that for us in the healthcare system? So having that discussion, talking about what people's choices and end-of-life decisions are, is something that's uncomfortable but will be such a gift that you have given to your family if you do that. It is a process, and I think the other thing we need to recognize is it's ongoing. So this year I might do an advanced directive and talk to my physician, and maybe in 2 years I may have been diagnosed with something that will change my decision. So it's something that needs to be an ongoing discussion. It talks about not only who is going to make decisions, but what would be my decisions. If I'm in a situation where I'm not going to recover, would I want artificial means to keep me alive, or would I want heroic measures for a longer period of time?
And that leads me to the next point, and that is this whole notion of DNR, and those initials have kind of, I don't know, they shed, you know, make people shudder, this whole idea of do not resuscitate. And obviously that needs to be included, or that concept, in these advanced directives. whether the patient wants to have these heroic efforts. But what does it really mean? I mean, does it mean that you basically give up on the patient, or does it mean other things?
I think you also bring up a very good point. Do not resuscitate is a negative concept, and in healthcare it means that someone's heart stops. They aren't going to try and use artificial means to bring that person back. There's a movement across the country to change that DNR to allow natural death. So again, we try to fight death in our society. It is going to happen, but do we want it to be naturally? Do we want to allow things to occur in a more respectful, dignified way? Or, and again, it's a very personal choice, some people believe that, yes, I want you to attempt to resuscitate. I want you to put me on a ventilator. I want you to give me the drugs or whatever means it is to bring my heart back to a beat.
But the point is that even if there is a DNR in their advanced directive, there's a lot of care that still is going to remain around the patient. It's not like it's just, a mark of, you know, I'm gone, I'm done. But rather, take care of me and allow me to die in a compassionate way.
Absolutely. And I think, again, that's another concept that people do have, that you're absolutely right, that once you sign a do not resuscitate, it means you're no longer going to be cared for or you will be abandoned. And that is not the case. It's, again, a decision that you make personally or your healthcare proxy about what your healthcare choices are. And yes, pain, symptom management, all kinds of comfort is provided to patients during that time frame.
So just quickly, I don't want to run out of time. I know that the goal of the end-of-life care, as you've already stated, is comfort, compassion, and a dignified death. What are some of the common problems that someone who's taking care of someone at the end of life sees in the patient?
Well, oftentimes pain is a big issue for people. Anxiety. People are afraid. It's an unknown situation. Difficulty breathing or dyspnea, because that comes with many, many diseases. So those are some of the symptoms. Fatigue is another one. Those are symptoms that people see at the end of life and are distressing to people. So if good symptom management is under control, then people really are able to have some of those quality issues with their families, have some of the discussions, and actually live longer because they are more comfortable with that.
And those kinds of treatments, like pain control, all of that, is made available whether you're in the hospital or in a hospice-type situation.
Absolutely.
Or at home, for that matter.
Absolutely.
With help.
Absolutely.
So very briefly, in the little time we have left, what advice do you give to families and caregivers?
I think the advice is to have some of the discussions that you need to with your family. I think, you know, not talking about death doesn't mean we're not going to die, but I think, what are our choices? What are our personal values? What do we respect? Do we want to spend our last how many weeks or months in a hospital, or would we rather have our family surrounding us, the dog jumping on the bed? So if you can, have these discussions, have them in an ongoing way with those who are most important to you.
And somehow recognize the fact that there is an inevitability to it, but it, done in a compassionate and dignified way, I think makes the passage that much easier.
And it will be helpful to your loved ones, because the bereavement issues afterwards are going to be so much easier to manage when you have seen a loved one die in a comfortable, respectful, dignified way versus in a manner that you don't believe that person would have wanted. So I think it's not only helpful for the person, but for their family and loved ones.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wisdom today. My guest has been Patricia Knox, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Palliative Care Service and Clinical Faculty for the Center for Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate Medical University. She's also a nationally certified palliative care NP. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break, so please stay with us.